Good evening. Does everybody have a copy of the Sandokai? I think you all do, don't you? Wanted to talk about that a little bit tonight. There you are. So even though these the precious mirror came many hundred years after the Sandokai, it is the same subject, just as the Sandokai came many hundreds of years after the Heart Sutra, but it's the same subject. It's tremendous efforts to say what can't be said. So sometimes it helps to look at the different ways that it comes up. And in the precious mirror, the part that we've come to, it's bright just at midnight. It doesn't appear at dawn. In the Sandokai, it talks about the very same thing. I can find it. The spiritual source shines clear in the light. The branching streams flow on in the dark. So, it's trying to say, it starts out with the mind of the great sage of India is intimately transmitted from west to east. While human faculties are sharp or dull, the way has no northern or southern ancestors. The spiritual source shines clear in the light. The branching streams flow on in the dark. And then it goes on to talk about grasping at things. This is addressing a kind of dilemma that, or a question that came up in ancient China about quick or slow enlightenment. And the various schools promoted one form of practice or the other. It wasn't really a contentious thing. Later, it was presented as a contentious thing, but they weren't at war at each other at that time. It's just the way we choose the Sangha that feels most comfortable to us. The expression of various teachers is different, even though it's the same Dharma, the same truth. And we resonate, and we resonate with the group, we resonate with the teacher, and with the teaching as it's presented. So it's addressing that question first and saying, don't worry about it, basically. That's trivial and part of what's the trouble with us, that we are so ambitious and are grasping for what can't be held. So the dark and the light are expressed here too. It's bright just at midnight. It doesn't appear at dawn. The it is the Dharma, or Buddha nature itself. It's us. So the bright, though we talk about light as the inner light or the great light or all of that, in this context means dualism. Not in a bad way, but in the way that it's how we know things. Light shines on things, and therefore we can see them. We live in a world of light. We depend on it. That's why the sun is worshipped in so many different places and ways. It's what keeps us alive and informed. And our tendency is to think that that's the only way or the only being of ourselves is just the light way. But of course, everything has another side. And the darkness side is the absolute side. The side that's so big and so complex, so beyond anything that we can think, that there's no way that we can define it, although we try. So sometimes we just say dark and light. The darkness flows on. The light shines. But of course, that's a very dualistic way of thinking about it, and the way the world actually works is that they are a piece of the same thing, or they're of a piece, so that you really can't say light without saying dark. They define each other the way war and peace do, or up and down, or any opposites. There's no such thing as light without dark. There's no such thing as peace without war. It's alarming in a way, because it's the way our mind works, and we tend to want to go to one side and choose it and ignore the other side. And in all these materials, this Mahayana teaching, it brings up both sides and then goes even beyond both sides. In the dark, there is light, but don't see it as light. In the light, there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. Light and dark oppose one another like the front and back foot in walking. So in the mirror samadhi, it says, it is bright at midnight, doesn't appear at dawn. It's the same thing. It acts as a guide for beings. Its use removes all pain. Although it is not fabricated, it is not without speech. I talked to a friend today who is having a lot of trouble with pain, and she took a pain clinic at the Monterey Zen Center, and she said she learned so much about how pain can become an alarm system that keeps telling us we have to do something, and it's a terrible situation. It's like ding, 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 you know, get help right now and turn it off, whatever you can do to turn off the pain. She said, but that's just a mind trip. And that if you have a different attitude toward pain, even though you feel the pain, it isn't the same. That it isn't a bother in the same way. It's not an alarming situation anymore. I learned this when one of my kids was pretty small and he was trying to set the dinner table, and he had a whole stack of, there were five of us, so he was setting five dinner plates and dropped them on his toe. And he was in so much pain, and all I could think to do for him at the moment was say, let it hurt. Don't fight it, just let it hurt. And it made a huge difference. And I've been using that ever since. I don't know where that came from, but it was very helpful, and it's been very helpful to me for a long time. So this Buddha nature, this Dharma with a big D, Dharma meaning truth, or wisdom, isn't some outside force that's we're fishing around for in some way. The it is the it in us, the it that lives us, and in some way is a guide, even though we hardly know how we get from one point to the next. In some way, we're being carried at the same time. And in sitting zazen, we begin to see the difference between the dark and the light. We become less enchanted by form as form, as an identity, as a way of thinking, all this color and shape and all the smells and tastes. There's another side of that. In the Heart Sutra, we say it's empty. Doesn't mean it's nothing. It's just the other side is so much bigger. And so in here, it's there's a kind of guidance in our life. And it's not without speech. So speech is one of the aspects of life. Not just human being, but all beings speak in some way. And what truth lives us, what honesty and integrity and autonomy and authority that speaks from our own life and our own body, we have to say it's me. And yet, we know it's not what we would call ordinary me. So it's like facing a jewel mirror. Form and image behold each other. You are not it. In truth, it is you. So if you can see your own reflection without naming it without identifying it. Just being face to face in the way that we can be face to face with each other. Then it's like our samadhi, our zazen, as we sit. We're sitting face to face. Somebody argued about this, trying to explain it, saying that if it's him, if it's Tozan, then there are two hims. If it's you, there are two yous, if the reflection is you. But there can't be two of you. There's just one. So, and if he's the one in the mirror, well, a mirror image can't live all by itself. It doesn't work. It has to be reflecting something. So that's what you are, not what it is. It is what you are. You really can't say, but something. And trying to talk about it too much just kind of messes it up. I have three quotations that are helpful. One is from Ma Zhu. The mind can be spoken of in terms of its two aspects, birth and death, and suchness. The mind as suchness is like a clear mirror which can reflect images. The mirror symbolizes the mind. The images symbolize the dharmas, the things. Dharma has two different meanings. Dharma's small d means all the stuff, all the things, all the ideas, every little thing that you can think of. Dharma, big D, is truth, wisdom, way, law. If the mind grasps at dharmas, then it gets involved in external causes and conditions, which is the meaning of birth and death. If the mind does not grasp dharmas, that is suchness. I think this is the most crucial thing. It's really about attachment and grasping. Grasping including pushing away, that we hold on and grab the things that we want, and the things that we hate, we try to push away. All the while that the world is, the causes and conditions of life itself are flowing on. And we just create a lot of trouble for ourselves when we get involved in that kind of attachment. So the mind grasping at things gets involved in external causes and conditions. And that's birth and death. The mind does not grasp dharmas, and that's our zazen. We watch things come and go in our mind. All the ideas, all the movies, all the stories. But we don't hold on to them. That itself is suchness. Messy as it isn't this perfect state, this golden, blooming kind of state. It's just the state of actually being where and who we are. Yi Wu said, "He is just I means that if I am enlightened, Buddha is just I, because the original face is my face and the Buddha nature is my nature. But why is this line followed by I am not he? Because to think that I am Buddha is an attachment. Becoming a Buddha does not result from a single thought. The so-called sudden enlightenment is to awaken to he is just I, or Buddha nature is my real self. But if you want to become a Buddha, you still need to cultivate yourself after this sudden enlightenment. And here's my favorite story to end it. It's from the Book of Serenity, which is the only book of koans that Soto Zen has. I hope you all have a chance to look into it sometime. This is case 52. Kaoshan asked Elder Day, "The Buddha's true reality body is like space." That's the Dharmakaya. "It manifests form in response to beings like the moon in the water. How do you explain the principle of response?" D said, "Like a donkey looking in a well." Kaoshan said, "You said a lot indeed, but you only said 80%. D said, "What about you, teacher?" Kaoshan said, "Like the well looking at the donkey." That's not as elegant as a precious jewel mirror, but it's the same thing. Are there questions? Me too.
Can you talk more about the darkness? How you say darkness and light, and it's both sides. And it's what do you mean in everyday life?
Well, in everyday life, we truck along in our work and our play, and it's full of thoughts, ideas. Experiences for which we give we provide lots of words to ourselves about what's happening and create a kind of story around it. We live a life in which sometimes we're burdened by things, but we're enjoying our life of ordinary life or a life of objects, you could say. But there's a whole another, in a way, if you think of it in terms of consciousness, there's this little bit of consciousness that we have on top that's just a little wee bit, just like that. And then this enormous unconscious, subconscious. There are lots of Buddhist names for all the levels of consciousness that are our life as well. It's in terms of the mind, it's like the body. We think of our body as this thing, but actually we are billions of people all living in harmony together as we think as one body, but actually all these, there are whole cities and villages and populations who are keeping what we call me alive. That's how we live. And we aren't very conscious of it. So it's like, there's this immense life of us of which we are not conscious, of which we participate, of which we are a part. And then we ourselves have things that are a part of us. So it's like Russian dolls, you could say. You've got E. coli having their life, and these little guys in our eyebrows, and then and they think they're the cat's meow, and then, you know, then there's us, and we think we're the cat's meow, but actually we're a part of the whole Megillah. And that whole thing is life itself. The causes and conditions that are streaming through the universe, of which we are a very small part. So in terms of the relative is all the falling apart stuff. You know, Buddha's teaching about how nothing is permanent. Everything falls apart. And on the other hand, it's all falling apart in a context which is called the absolute. So the relative is changing all the time, but it's changing as everything is changing. So you can say its form in emptiness is in the context of form, and form is in the context of emptiness. They are each other's context, which isn't quite right either, because they are each. Well, form is form and emptiness is emptiness. That's the most important part of it. Because we can't really say. But the not knowing is the absolute side, the dark side. We know all the things, all the dharmas, the little dharmas, we know too much, really, because we depend on it so much. And we forget to depend on not knowing, which is where our support really comes from. That's our wisdom and our Buddha nature, the part we don't know. Have you translated more of it, Ron?
No. Just exactly where I lose my spirit, except for I don't want to say thinking about it, contemplating it.
That's the best way to be with it, is just to be with it.
I like the metaphor of the mirror a lot. There's so many ways my mind can go with that if I try to start analyzing it without having to put it in words. It raises as many questions as it answers, like what's out there was reflected someone here, like somebody sitting in front of a mirror, and there's all this stuff, or is it the other way around? Or are they the same? Or are there mirror images of each other? Or did I go out there? Or if I wasn't out there and there were things out there, did they come in?
Don't think too hard.
No, I'm not, really. I'm just trying to put it.
Yes. Yeah.
Lacking any other tool.
Yeah.
But it's really an interesting.
Well, if you think of it according to the story, Tozan was walking across a bridge and looked into the water of the river. There was a pool, a quiet pool, as he looked down there, and he saw his own face. It's a shock.
I wanted to ask you a question about the page. Page 4, it says original Chinese text, and then it's left in the text.
This is Sando Kai.
And then it's a translation of the text. And then it's got what I think is actually Chinese. Well, what is this stuff on top? I guess it's on the
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I can't figure it out. I have to kind of look it up. It doesn't really match what's here. Maybe it's some sort of...
Maybe it's an introduction of some kind.
Yeah, that's
what it looks like. Suzuki Roshi has a wonderful book about the Sando Kai. That's something that we could study one of these days. It's a very helpful book. Branching streams flow in the darkness. Branching streams, I think it's called. Well, it's 8, so we should stop. We'll do some more next time. I've divided it up into sections. We've done the first two, which is still on the first page. The third one, I'm going to bring in the five ranks and the whole schematic, and then tell you not to pay any attention to it. So it's very interesting. It's just a little too interesting. And then I've divided three more sections on the second page. So it's... We've got four more evenings to talk about this.